Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. For the past 43 years, the American Indian Film Festival has encouraged Native and non-Native filmmakers to present the culture of Native voices, views, and stories that have been historically excluded from mainstream media. It is carrying on this year following the recent passing of Michael Smith, the film festival's founder. Michael has been on this show many times discussing his passion for the festival. This year, it runs through November 11th. If you are in the Bay Area, it is at the Brava Theater in San Francisco. And today we are speaking with filmmakers and also someone who's featured in a film. Today we're joined by Chrisanne Hessing, documentary filmmaker and digital media producer based in Toronto. She directed the short film Turning Tables, which is about producer and DJ Joshua Classic Roots DePerry. And Chrisanne joins us in studio. Hi, thank you for coming in.
Thank you for having us. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's great to have you. Joshua DePerry, also known as Classic Roots, is a Toronto-based music producer and performer pioneering powwow techno. As someone who's not really a fan of techno, I love the powwow techno. It was so great to hear that.
Oh, I'm glad to hear that, for sure.
Well, thank you, and we'll talk more about it throughout the show. Joshua says that he navigates two worlds that inspire his music by putting his own spin on what it means to be urban and indigenous. He is Ojibwe and Blackfoot. And I'd like to kick off the show talking to Michael Smith's daughter, Matea, who is carrying on this festival. We are so glad that you're all doing that. Hi, Matea. Welcome to the show.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. I'm so glad you were able to join us, and I was so sad to hear about your dad passing, because we have had him on this show for I don't know how many years, maybe the last 10 years or so.
Yeah, I remember him. I used to sometimes sit next to him while he was doing his interviews with you.
Well, I mean, how are you all doing? It was just so sad for everyone who, you know, in the Native community and the wider community who are very familiar with and really love this film festival.
Yeah, it was a complete loss to our family and to our community and, to the film world. But, he gave his life to the film festival, and, you know, we supported his dream. And as a family, my mom and I and all of our family, you know, we've always been there to help my dad, you know, achieve his dreams, you know, do whatever he needed. And so in turn, we're doing the same. And so we're continuing the legacy. And again, you know, my whole family is involved, down to ticketing, all the way to graphic design, you know, catering. You know, we're all coming together just to make sure that the festival happens. And so, yeah, and we're excited. We completed our opening night, and so it was fun. Really fun.
Hey, Matea, can you talk about what this festival meant to your father? Because I remember talking to him about the lack of media coverage of this festival. I'm not getting my years right, but if I remember correctly, the San Francisco Chronicle finally started covering this festival maybe 4 or 5 years ago, and it's been around for 43 years. And I remember talking to him about that, how difficult it is to get media coverage.
Yeah, you know, we're just, you know, not on the radar, you know, and so unfortunately, we should be. We've been around for 43 years. I did reach out to the Chronicle to see, you know, if we can, work things out, and I never received a response. And so, it is a little difficult. You know, you work really hard, and you try to get your work out and send it to different media outlets, and so that they can give you some recognition, give you a nod, mention you in their community events. And I've been, you know, looking, keeping my eyes and ears open. I haven't seen too much coverage this year, even though we did send our media release out. So hopefully, you know, maybe I just haven't seen it, but you know, it is a little bit frustrating. Mm. And so we're just, you know, we look to the community, you know, to you know, to spread the word by word of mouth, you know, use social media. And, you know, it got us really far yesterday, you know, just with just by word of mouth and social media. We had a very massive crowd last night, and it was so, you know, warm and inviting. And that was without coverage from the big media guys. And so we can still do it. We can still be successful in our own ways. And so we're just going to keep continuing to do what we do.
And final thoughts, Matea, before we let you go, what did this festival mean to your dad?
Oh my God. Yeah, he loved this festival. He put everything he had to do it in. He did it until he was on his last leg last year. You know, it was important for him to be able to showcase films every year about Native people. He was so proud to be an Indian man, and you know, be able to share stories and share these stories with the community, with the outside Bay Area community, and so forth. And you know, he was just a very, very powerful speaker, a very, very proud man. And you know, we're just doing our very best to continue his legacy and make him proud. And and I just would encourage everybody to come out to the festival and continue enjoying in on the festivities. And we have some great films and great filmmakers that are going to be attending this week up until Sunday. And so our website is www.aifisf.com, so ticket sales can be bought there. And tonight is also our award show, so you know, I encourage everybody to come out.
Well, we always loved having your father on, and just thank you for carrying on the festival. Thanks to all of your extended family and all of the volunteers who do so much work to bring this festival to all of us in San Francisco. Thank you so much for joining us, Matea.
Thank you.
That's Matea Zavala. She is the daughter of Michael Smith, who passed away earlier this year. He is the American Indian Film Festival's founder, and he has been on this show probably the last 10 years. We do a show every year about the American Indian Film Festival. And I wanted to ask both of you, and we're going to introduce a few more guests in a minute, what were your thoughts about what you just heard? Joshua, I'll never forget talking to Michael about how hard it was for him to get media coverage. I mean, we're talking about the Bay Area, and at that time we had more radio stations and the media was flourishing even more. Unfortunately, not so much now, but he couldn't even get a review in the Chronicle, our major paper, our main newspaper in this city. What are your thoughts about that?
My thoughts about it, I think, to be honest, growing up, I noticed that, you know, we didn't have as much, you know, media or whatnot, the coverage or even, just exposure but now in this year, in the 2018 or the 21st century, where we're using the powerful tool of social media nowadays, and it's starting to burst up with many amazing indigenous people and non-indigenous people to reach out and collaborate with amazing ideas and creative ways and art and passion. And my thoughts about it's great to you know, we're all rising up and reclaiming our own identity. And it's the new era where all of us who can actually just feel free and follow our dreams.
Yeah, I think Michael would be so proud to see how things are changing, because social media is really changing the game.
Yes.
Yeah. That is Joshua DePerry, also known as Classic Roots. He's a Toronto-based music producer and performer pioneering powwow techno. He is featured in the short film Turning Tables, which was made by today's guest, Chris Ann Hessing. Joshua is Ojibwe and Blackfoot. I'd like to welcome a few other filmmakers to the show. Elizabeth Castle is a scholar, activist, and media maker working in collaboration with Native nations and underrepresented communities. She's co-director and producer of Warrior Women, an amazing documentary about Madonna Thunderhawk, a longtime activist and leader in the American Indian movement. Hi, Elizabeth. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
It's great to have you, and thank you for making this very important film. I'd also like to welcome Zoe Hopkins to the show. Zoe is a writer, Mohawk language teacher, and director of another great film, Kayak to Klemtu. It's a feature film about a 14-year-old girl preparing for a kayaking trip along the shores of the Great Bear Rainforest on the coast of British Columbia with her family to protest oil tanker traffic. Hi, Zoe. Thank you for joining us.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Zoe, I wanted to ask you also, what are your thoughts about just the changes that we're seeing? The fact that the American Indian Film Festival had a hard time getting coverage in our main paper here in, you know, big San Francisco, and now here we are in 2018 after Standing Rock, and we're just seeing so, things have changed so much thanks to social media. There's new documentaries out, new books with, you know, Native people telling their own stories, or non-Natives doing a really good job of telling Native stories. Can you just talk about the changes that we're seeing?
Oh, it's such an exciting time to be involved in making films for Indigenous people. Things are changing. You know, people, I'm from Canada, and people there have sort of termed this time the Indigenous Renaissance, with all of the new works that are coming out across all forms of media. It's really an amazing time. It's unfortunate that the mainstream doesn't get to experience it very much, because we're still kind of invisible, you know, on the screen, in the mainstream. But, you know, our own people are, like, super excited and watching it and really engaged, and we have packed houses, and it's kind of insular but awesome at the same time. Mm-hmm.
Elizabeth, what would you add? I recently saw you and Madonna Thunderhawk when Warrior Women screened here in San Francisco. And I'm just guessing it's been an amazing experience for you to not only spend so much time with Madonna, but to also travel around the country with her and show this incredible film about her life and other Native activists.
Yeah, it's you know, when you work on something as long as we have, because Warrior Women in a lot of ways is about 20 years in the making.
Wow.
In terms of the relationship and the roots and building the interviews and the trust and the accountability in Indian country, and particularly with activists who really, you know, the one thing they have is their story. You know, you don't have retirement, you don't have things you can relax into, you just have your story. So getting the film out there at this time, it's just sort of like, you know, you look over your shoulder and you're like, is this really, you know, as Zoe said, an Indigenous Renaissance and a year of, you know, let's make it more than a year, but of the Indigenous woman. Mm. I mean, it's, I think what's super powerful is the fact, and everyone has said this so far, it's like, you know, mainstream, we're always stuck trying to educate the folks, you know, who really know nothing, and they're part of the group that has been just sort of brainwashed with our standard histories. So this way, we're just moving ahead. I mean, it's pathetic that the San Francisco Chronicle isn't just picking up on it and making it a super priority,
mm-hmm,
right?
Right.
But otherwise, it is really something that's just growing by the power. It just can't be contained. And
yeah,
that's what I think is so awesome.
Right. And what would you add, Chrisanne? Your documentary, Turning Tables, is about Joshua, DJ Joshua, Classic Roots to Perry. And you spent time in a Native community talking about music and also the past, but what music means to people.
Yeah, and I just say that it was just a life-changing experience to not only be able to be invited to these communities and spend time with them, but really just with the youth, and to see the fire and the passion and the creative energy that was there with them. The way they just gravitated to Joshua was something that, like, I mean, I did my best to try and capture that and translate that to the screen, but it was it's just part of our mandate with this film, and with us going on tour now with the film and Classic Roots is giving back to the community and just letting these young people know that, yeah, this is the time, you know, things are finally changing, and there's never been a better moment to reach for your dreams and let your voice be heard.
Yeah, and, you know, I have to get personal for a moment, because it's amazing to see the changes, but it's also so difficult to see how long it's taking. I was just thinking about, so my grandmother was Pomo from Northern California, and in Ukiah, she had to deal with signs on the windows of restaurants and stores that said no Indians or dogs allowed. My grandma and my grandparents were all forced to go to boarding schools. And So in the year 2018, we're all celebrating this, and we should, but 2018, we finally have two congresswomen going, mm-hmm. Native American women going to Congress in 2018. And it is a celebration, but it also just, it kind of just makes you want to scream at the same time because it's taking so long. And we have Charisse Davids from Kansas and Deb Holland from New Mexico. Deb Holland was on Democracy Now! Saying that, this gives me chills, one of the first things she's going to do is call for a probe of missing Indigenous women.
Yeah.
Joshua, what are your thoughts on this? I mean, it's exciting, but it's just so, it's hard also.
Yeah, it is. It's a very heavy subject, I say. But the one thing I always remember when my grandpa always says to me is that, no matter how the rough road is, you always gotta, you know, heal and talk to everyone, because that's the best way to do is, like, you know, speak out to everyone and reach out to everyone. So that way, you know, we're all connected in one way in all my relations.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And what would you add, Zoe?
You know, I think that if things obviously don't change fast enough, but it struck me last night being in that beautiful theater, the Brava Theater on 24th, that building was built in 1926, you know, and that was a time where certainly it would have been segregated and we would have not been allowed to sit on the main floor.
Right.
But here we are today watching these films made by us, about us, and it doesn't, you know, weighs on me that I'm standing there on the stage showing a film starring Indigenous peoples in a place where I would not have allowed to be on the main floor, you know, not that long ago. Probably in the 70s that would have changed. So things have taken way too long, but it's also time to celebrate. And I think that it's a crazy dichotomy that we live in, that we have to carry the past with us in a very real way in the present, but that we still are thriving and surviving and celebrating who we are.
Gosh, that was intense, Zoe, that you just said that about the theater, because, so another personal story, my great-grandmother, Elsie Allen, when she was living in Ukiah in the theater, the balcony was called the N-word balcony for the Indians, and so they couldn't sit on the bottom floor, so all of the women filed a lawsuit. And the theater owner didn't want to deal with it. So he said, all right, you can sit on the bottom floor. I mean, that's, mm-hmm. this is just two generations ago, not very far, you know?
Yeah,
it's just...
I've shown my film in other historical theaters and have heard from the people in those areas, you know, that they were, when they were young, they weren't allowed to sit there. You know, mm-hmm. these are people who are alive right now.
Yeah.
One theater I was in, that segregation existed until the 70s, so... Even I, as a little girl, would not have been allowed to sit where I pleased, you know, and then here I am, a grown woman, and I'm standing at the front showing a film that I made.
Wow.
So it's changed my lifetime, but it's crazy to me that as a little kid, that's how it was, you know, so it's an amazing amount of change, but it's also shocking that kind of stuff just was so recent.
It is shocking. And Zoe, you're a Mohawk language teacher, and that really mm-hmm. stood out for me because, as you know, that, you know, in the boarding schools, Native American kids were not allowed to teach or speak their language. In many cases, if they did, they were beaten. And so a lot of Native Americans didn't teach the language to their kids for fear that they would also be beaten. Can you talk about the work that you do?
Mm-hmm. I teach the Mohawk language online. I have about 100 students right now. My numbers float. They're mostly people, but
Zoe, we're losing you. Your line is cutting out.
Oh, sorry. How is this?
Okay, I think that's better.
Okay. Sorry, I'm in a hotel.
Okay.
I have about 100 students. Most of them are Mohawk, but some are settlers and some are abroad. Today, there is a historical moment happening. You can watch on cpac.ca, I think it is. One of my students is a member of parliament in Canada.
You know, Zoe, your line keeps dropping. If you're in a hotel, maybe we can get your hotel and room number, and maybe we can call you on a landline. Let's try doing that. Okay. Sorry about that. That is Zoe Hopkins. She is a writer, Mohawk language teacher, and director of the feature film Kayak to Klemtu. It's about a 14-year-old girl preparing for a kayak trip along the shores of the Great Bear Rainforest on the coast of British Columbia with her family to protest oil tanker traffic. We're also joined today by Elizabeth Castle. She is co-director and producer of Warrior Women, a documentary about Madonna Thunderhawk, a leader in the American Indian movement and a longtime activist. Chrisanne Hessing is a documentary filmmaker and digital media producer based in Toronto. She directed the short film Turning Tables, which is about today's other guest, Joshua DePerry, also known as Classic Roots, a Toronto-based producer and performer pioneering powwow techno, and Joshua's Ojibwe and Blackfoot. And today we're talking about the American Indian Film Festival. If you are in San Francisco, it runs through November 11th at the Brava Theater. You can find more information at yourcallradio.org. The awards show is always really amazing, and that's tonight. It starts at 7 o'clock. And if you'd like to join us, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Chrisanne and Joshua, let's talk about Turning Tables. How did you learn about Joshua's incredible talents?
Well, yeah, our relationship actually goes back a few years now. We met working on the set of I Lost My Talk, which was a multimedia dance film choreographed by Santi Smith, who's our mutual connection for that project. I was hired to be on the crew, and Josh was one of the dancers. So that's where we first met, but it wasn't until a year later when I was thinking about the next doc I would do, and I got this... great advice from an old friend who said, sometimes the subject of your documentary is closer than you think. So I went to my Facebook friends list and I was like, let's see who I know already who's doing amazing things. And that was just around the time that Josh was embarking on a tour with DJ Shub, who was formerly of A Tribe Called Red, and they were collaborating. Mm-hmm. And so I met up with Josh, and he invited me to come see him perform at, I think it was Shub's release party. And when I went, that was the first time that I saw him in his regalia. I didn't even know that he was a fancy dancer either, so it was totally shocking for me at a sensory overload seeing him perform like in that. It was like an underground club in Toronto too, and just the burst of colors. Wow. It was truly amazing, and from there I had my mind made up. We need to do some sort of film, and the rest is history.
Mm-hmm. The regalia is so beautiful.
Thank you.
The colors are gorgeous. And can you describe what it looks like? And if you can, in fact, your photo is the photo that we're using on today's show.
Oh.
So if you can take a look at it right now, if you go to yourcallradio.org.
The regalia itself, it has some ribbons on top of my yoke, and then the apron as well. And the bustles is about 56 feathers on top, upper back and the lower back. It almost looked like a men's traditional where it has one bustle, but it has two bustles, and it's very colorful. My family colors is blue, and it means healing in our territory. And so it's I had that regalia for almost 4 or 5 years now. And then right now I'm actually a good friend of mine. Her name is Rhonda Dockstader, and she's originally from Ottawa area, and she's actually creating a new regalia for me. So big shout out to her.
Well, we're going to take a quick break. Today we are talking about the American Indian Film Festival. You can find more information at yourcallradio.org. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, it's our media roundtable. We are going to discuss coverage of the horrific shooting that happened last night in Southern California. It's you can't even keep up with it. It's just shooting after shooting after shooting. So we're going to talk about that. We will also talk about coverage of the midterms and the impacts of economic sanctions on the lives of Iranians. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, yourcall@kalw.org. Today we are discussing the American Indian Film Festival. If you're in the Bay Area, it runs through November 11th at the Brava Theater in the Mission District of San Francisco. You can find the schedule at yourcallradio.org. This year, the festival is remembering the founder, Michael Smith, who recently passed away. We have had him on the shows so many times, and we're so grateful that his family is continuing this important festival. We're joined today by Chrisanne Hessing, documentary filmmaker. She directed the short film Turning Tables, which is about producer and DJ Joshua DePerry, who's also on the show today. He's known as Classic Roots, a Toronto-based music producer and performer pioneering powwow techno. He's Ojibwe and Blackfoot. We're also joined by Zoe Hopkins, a writer, Mohawk language teacher, and director of Kayak to Klemtu, a film about a 14-year-old girl preparing for a kayaking trip along the shores of the Great Bear Rainforest on the coast of British Columbia with her family to protest oil tanker traffic. And Elizabeth Castle is a scholar and activist, co-director and producer of Warrior Women, a documentary about Madonna Thunderhawk, a leader in the American Indian movement and longtime activist. And let's hear the trailer from the short film Turning Tables, which was made and directed by Chrisanne Hessing and features Joshua DePerry, also known as Classic Roots, a Toronto-based music producer and performer pioneering powwow techno.
How do I feel when I put it on?
It reminds me of back when the Native people were traveling in the bush and just visualizing how they were before the settlers came.
Powwow techno, or just techno in general, is quite new to this community. I feel that's important. It's showing that we're still here.
That is a trailer from the short film Turning Tables. It was directed by today's guest, Chrisanne Hessing, and it is about Joshua DePerry, also known as Classic Roots, a Toronto-based music producer and performer pioneering powwow techno. Joshua is Ojibwe and Blackfoot. Before we talk about powwow techno, Joshua, you were raised in Thunder Bay, and you come from the Bear Clan.
Correct.
Tell us about your community.
Well, my community... growing up, I guess I could say that, but being in Thunder Bay, it was, you know, it's all, it had some ups and downs, and especially it's very, not as quite as diverse as Toronto, where it's, very multicultural. It was pretty much, very black and white growing up. But overall, I managed to, pull it through where, never let anyone put me down or whatnot, and knowing that I'm proud who I am as a person or as an Indigenous person, and knowing it's out there for me to follow my dreams. But Thunder Bay, it will always be my home, and I will try to make great examples for Indigenous and non-Indigenous that, we're all in one, but we're all healing through great things and follow our dreams and fulfill our careers.
I loved seeing you talk to the youth in your community about powwow techno.
Yes.
And in the film, you talk about making some wrong decisions when you were young, waking up in jail and saying, I made a decision, I cannot do this anymore.
Yes, I could say, we're all human beings, we're all not perfect, and, we make a lot of mistakes, especially in my early 20s, I made a lot of things, ups and downs, and, and it's okay to make mistakes, because you learn from them, and, you grow from them, and knowing that you're greater, that being, creating yourself as a person to have happiness and growth. And I truly believe that, because, from the mistakes from when I was younger, I said to myself, oh, this is the end of the world. But when a few years later, I just say, hey, I'm still here. I'm still alive and healthy and happy.
And talk about how you got into music and powwow techno. this is not something that I've heard of before or heard much of before. Is this pretty common? Is this fairly new?
Well, it's I could say it's very new because I was encouraged from DJ Sean, formerly a Tribe Called Red member. He also has a style called powwow step where he integrated, you know, dubstep and reggaeton and boomerang style that, you know, he actually did produce the Nation to Nation. And so I was so inspired from his music. And I guess one day I asked him, I was like, is that okay if it's possibly I can integrate powwow music and techno music or house music? He's like, yeah, whatever makes you happy, do it, man. Mm-hmm. Do it, because that's what keeps us going and growing and you know, giving good example to the youth and showing that you don't have to be in the reserve. You can follow your dreams and get out of the reserve and travel all over the world. Mm-hmm. And just not just for music, but any art form.
And so tell us about your experiences, because we travel with you on a journey, and one of the more interesting parts of the film also is about your trip to Berlin, Germany.
Yeah, well, you know what, to be honest, I'm actually going back to Berlin tomorrow.
Oh.
For another opportunity. I'm going to be DJing and dancing for the with 6 Degrees in Berlin, so I'm very, very excited for that. My experience last year, like, to be honest, like, I was so nervous, and, you know, it was very new to me because I'd never been, you know, cross seas, and, you know, that was my very first time. But when I got there and, you know, and I put on the regalia and started dancing at the East Side wall, busking and, you know, just making ends meet and somewhat, and there was actually a local guy who came up to me and says, hey, I really love your dancing and you're great what you do. But he also asked me, he asked me a question. He says, I know it's not a costume because you're not mimicking anything, but what do you call it? I'm like, I call it, back home we call it outfit, regalia, because that's who we are as an indigenous person. He's like, oh, that's great. But let me ask you another question. I know that you're not an Indian because you're not from India, but it was a proper way to say it. I'm like, oh my God, this guy knows the history of it.
Yeah.
And he's like, I was like, well, back home I always used to say, like, you know, First Nation, Native, Indigenous, or Anishinaabe. And then I joked around with him. I was like, you can call me Josh or Classic Roots. And he just starts laughing. Oh, man, that's hilarious. He's like, I'm sorry, but my English is not really good. I'm like, dude, your English is great. It's very proper, I told him. And he's like, oh, man, that's great. And he also did mention that there is a native village outside of Munich, I think he said to me. And he's like, and he was like commenting about my style. He's like, you know what? You can actually outbeat those other native dances over there. I'm like, oh, really? Okay, that's cool. But overall, the Berlin trip, it was amazing because I learned a lot from the techno scene as well. Like, it's huge there. And I gained a lot of knowledge, a lot of experience, new opportunities, new people. And I just really had a good time just, you know, learning new things and, you know, and brought me back some gifts and some new experience, and especially I'm looking forward to create more powwow techno next year in a year or two, because it's very, very exciting that the inspiration, you know, it gave me so much understanding, like, where should I start writing music and where can I, you know, start fulfilling these gaps where I can make it fulfilling myself. Yes.
I'm sorry about the cough.
No worries.
I was thinking about calling in sick today, but I really wanted to host this show, so excuse me.
It's an honor.
thank you. Chrisanne, I want to ask you, and actually, Elizabeth also, well, Elizabeth, you made a documentary, so it's a little bit different. And Zoe, you're native, so I think it's a little bit different. But I was thinking about this. If for some reason, I was thinking about when Diane Sawyer went to Pine Ridge. It was years ago.
Oh, that was the worst.
Yeah, and she focused on youth suicide and alcoholism, and it's just these stereotypes that I'm so tired of. And I know that we're getting past that, but still, I think when you have, you know, an introduction, you hear about the negative things, like, we're getting over the stereotypes. We've been hearing this for so long. So, Chrisanne, as a filmmaker, putting a short together is hard because I'm sure you have so much footage and you had to make a lot of decisions. What story do I really want to focus on? You know, you could have focused on Joshua and the mistakes he made in the jail and the struggles of the youth. And we've had that for so many stories and so many films. So can you talk about that thought process?
I think it's exactly that. It's because there's been such a this negative narrative that's always been out there. And I just, you know, I think back to just when I first met Joshua and, like, the energy that he brought. It was all just positivity. It was all just optimism. And I thought, well, that's who he is as a person. So that's what the film needs to reflect. This is is a story about success. It's a story about celebration. And, you know, that was just the essence of it. So it was a really great time to be able to focus on all the amazing things that has happened as a result of the sacrifices he made. And, you know, of course, it's important to recognize where he came from and what he came out of to be where he is today, because that just, you know, that for Indigenous and non-Indigenous people who are watching the film, they get a bit more of a sense, a rounded out sense of what he's been through, and you're able to celebrate his success with him even more. Mm-hmm. You know, there's just that happiness, that genuine pride to see someone like him come out of that and then just so beautifully perform and celebrate his culture. Like, that for me, like, as a first generation immigrant, you know, something that I feel like myself and a lot of maybe first and second generation immigrants faces, this duality of cultures, of where you come from versus where you've been brought up. And I continue to learn so much from Josh, because he takes that duality in his stride, and there's something that all of us can learn from in that.
Yeah, well, you did a great job, really. I was thinking a lot about the choices that you had to make, and, you know, being honest about it, but also showing that there's so much more to it.
Yes.
This is complex. We're all complex characters. Mm-hmm. Zoe, was that you who jumped in there?
I'm here. I'm back.
Hi. Thank you so much. Was that you who jumped in there and said something about that Diane Sawyer on Pine Ridge?
No.
Did you remember that? Oh, that was you, Elizabeth?
Yeah. I remember teaching when that was on, and I just used like 2 weeks to talk about how everything in this was, there wasn't anything helpful. It was damaging. It was destructive. It was not a good piece of journalism, and I still use it as like the example of how we can still have these parallel universes where someone's making this, and then we have all the amazing stuff that's coming out, you know, in Native communities.
Right.
So I just hated it.
Yeah. Zoe, I'm glad we have you back on a good line. What would you add?
Pardon?
What would you add just about the decisions that filmmakers, even just media makers in general, make when it comes to, you know, making films about Native communities?
I would say if you're not an Indigenous person, you know, step back and let Indigenous people tell our own stories, because, you know, it's our turn to do so. Our stories have been misrepresented for so long by non-Indigenous people, and it's just time for our voice to be the ones that tell an authentic version of our stories. So I think that's what is happening in the mass media, is just, you know, people think, or they think they know what's going on, or they just have no idea about our history because they haven't been here, they haven't been around to experience it firsthand. So I think that that's why we see things that make us so upset.
Mm-hmm.
We need more representation of ourselves in the mass media, you know, like if you look at... I've seen so many photos of like of all the different anchors on different stations, and they're largely white people, and that's another problem we have. You know, I think that if we want to see our culture represented properly, our people represented properly, we need people on the inside also. So
yeah.
I think diversifying writers' rooms, newsrooms, we'll start to see some change.
Zoe, let's talk about your film, Kayak to Klemtu. It is about a 14-year-old girl preparing for a kayaking trip along the shores of the Great Bear Rainforest on the coast of British Columbia with her family to protest oil tanker traffic. And this is a personal film for you.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us more about it.
So I was present in Bella Bella, where I was born. Bella Bella's a little community on the northwest coast. It's only accessible by boat or plane. And I was there when we had to testify against a pipeline and against the resulting oil tanker traffic that would be seen right in front of our community. And for 2 days, I got to watch all the testimony that got put down against this, the potential disasters that would ensue if there would be super tankers in front of our village in the waters. And it was just ludicrous to me that we would have to try to prove that this was a really bad idea, that tankers would go through these waters. It's a narrow, rocky passage, and it's just not meant for that kind of traffic. That kind of traffic belongs on the outside passage in the ocean, not on the little passage where people live and get their food. So that I just listened to all the words, and I just wanted to make something that where people would see, you know, how beautiful our land is, how beautiful our people are, and why it's so important to protect that part of the planet. And hopefully, you know, my wish is that because I've portrayed a mixed family and a blended family, that people will have, that all kinds of people will have an access point into this story. And it's because this is an issue that is one that we all need to take up, because we can't protect the planet by ourselves. It's an issue for all of humanity to take on. Unfortunately, when we see environmental disasters, we often see Indigenous people are the first there to, first responders to disasters, and the first people to protect the land, like we have, like we saw at Standing Rock. Mm-hmm. I shot that film while Standing Rock protests were happening, and it sure weighed heavily on my mind, you know, that I was making this film in a different part of the world about the same issue, and then a day after we wrapped, a spill happened right outside of Bella Bella.
Wow.
A tugboat ran aground because the pilot was asleep on the bridge and nobody was there to back them up. So they ran aground on a rock right by our clam beds, where we get most of our clams and most of our traditional foods in a creek in that area. And the tugboat sank and leaked fuel into our clam beds and traditional food gathering area for over a month. And it sat there, and the government's response was quite slow and not good enough, and it was very clear that when a disaster like that happens, it's impossible to contain that fuel. It's impossible to protect all the creatures and the food and the sea life and from that horrible toxic mess. You just can't, you know. So I went back during that spill, and I made a documentary called Impossible to Contain, and you can watch it on YouTube. And it's a 360 documentary, so you can watch it on your phone or tablet and move all around so you can see 360 degrees around you and see what a spill looks like. The original title of that documentary was This is What a Spill Looks Like, but I also wanted to show how that impacts a family and our food source. So you can be present in a family's dinner, and I'm ended up being in it. It was quite a thing. I sat in a boat on my birthday for 8 hours watching them try to get the boat finally, after 33 days, get that tugboat out of the water.
Wow. Excuse me. And you tweeted that the government response was really really poor and slow, and the only option left was to sue. And excuse me if I say this wrong, is it the Heiltsuk First Nation?
Heiltsuk, yeah.
First Nation did just that. They sued the operator of the sunken tugboat and the Canadian government. What is the status of that lawsuit?
It's still in, like, underway. So if anybody wanted to reach out and help, because that's going to be a long and expensive process, Raven Trust is collecting donations for that effort. It's a two-pronged donation thing where you can support that lawsuit, and because we are the nation is taking on the cost of doing environmental assessments, and the government and the Marine Corporation are not legally responsible to do anything about the spill at this point. So even though it will be a decades-long impact on our community, if not a permanent impact on our community, the government and the Marine Corporation are finished with their responsibilities to the people and the land there. So, you know, the expense of doing environmental assessments and collecting tests of earth and water samples and bagging up dead animals and birds and sea life, all of that falls to the, to our people. And because we eat there, you know, we need to make sure that it's safe. So that's an enormous cost as well. So Raven Trust is where to look for how to help.
And if you'd like to help, it's raventrust.com. We will also put a link on our website, yourcallradio.org. Zoe Hopkins is a Mohawk language teacher and director of Kayak to Klimtu. Kayak to Klimtu is nominated for Best Director, Best Film, Best Actress, Best Actor, Best Supporting Actress. There's going to be a ceremony, awards ceremony tonight at the American Indian Film Festival. If you're in the Bay Area, it's at the Brava Theater, 7 o'clock, and the festival runs through November 11th. We're also joined by Chrisanne Hessing. She's director of the short film Turning Tables, which is nominated for Best Live Short. It's about today's guest. Chrisanne's in studio. So is Josh DePerry. He's known as Classic Roots, a Toronto-based music producer and performer, pioneering powwow techno. He's Ojibwe and Blackfoot. Elizabeth Castle is co-director and producer of Warrior Women, which is nominated for Best Documentary Feature. This is an amazing documentary. It's about Madonna Thunderhawk, a leader in the American Indian movement and longtime activist. And Elizabeth, I understand that you are writing a book about, is it about Native women activists? And is that how you found out and you learned more about Madonna Thunderhawk?
Yeah. It's funny because the one thing that Madonna said, and maybe this is like the funny, not funny part, but she's just like, just don't make it the Madonna Thunderhawk show. So, but we're hoping, you know, with all the time that we spent, that when you see the film, you realize that her stories, like, you're watching it and going, I get that. I feel that. My grandmother went through that, that she becomes, you know, this carrier of lots of people's stories. And that was because, when I first met her 20 years ago, I was trying to collect interviews and oral histories with Native women activists on the, you know, U.S. side of the Red Power movement. And so there's 60-plus interviews that some were filmed, some were audio, and then it just became, you know, less, and they weren't, like, always standard traditional, you know, one-on-one interviews. It was more about trying to capture for the women that I met being part of this collaboration to get as many of their voices out there. So the oral history collection is going up online so that everybody can see it and see where it comes from, and that the book is the thing that you have to do as an academic to have a job. But I was much more interested in getting a film out there that would really impact people. But the book is about women were the backbone, men were the jawbone, Native women's activism in the Red Power movement. And that has, like, a very interesting story about how it came about. It's not my phrase. It was used at the founding of Women of All Red Nations in 1978. And so, yeah, getting that done so that the history itself helps transform, you know. So people are like, oh, missing and murdered Indigenous women, I haven't heard of this. It's like, it's literally the way in which you, you know, practice genocide and found a country. So these things are, you know, I want to help provide that historical context because, you know, history is our present. Like, right. We keep thinking that, you know, we don't need to know it when it's literally, you know, this circle that never ends of experience.
You were able to find incredible archival footage from the 70s, and you have this one scene in which Madonna Thunderhawk is young, and she's talking to young Native Americans, and I mean, this line, I haven't stopped thinking about it since I saw the film weeks ago at the Roxy. She said, "This country was built on the bones of our people." How were you able to find that amazing footage?
It's and I'm sure everybody else can relate. It's like being a private detective to try to think, to basically think with a mind of, if it's in the outtakes of the outtakes of the outtakes, trapped between two, you know, filing cabinets, because that's how folks looked at it. You know, if you wanted to find women and children, you basically, you know, I could find, for example, Madonna in. She organized the Black Hills International Survival Gathering with a group of people in 1980. There were 10,000 people who came there. And I looked through all of these reels, and if you look really close, there's Madonna with a giant walkie-talkie and a hat in the background. So, you know, what it took to sort of to super sleuth her out of history, it took 4 years, really.
Wow.
4 additional years to find it. But, you know, find, and those, all those really awesome scenes of her in survival school with the young kids, were all part of a collection of outtakes from a film that was made. So, you know, you got to find them, you got to get it transferred. And, you know, those relationships you need to develop, like, they're full relationships, because the archival was the switch that we wanted to make, because Les Verite of, you know, folks just wanted that tragic Native story. That's the thing they typically understand from a sort of funding perspective.
Wow.
But, you know, we really wanted to show, you know, boarding school is part of the story, absolutely, but can we show empowered Native kids first?
Thank you. So actually, Beth, they wanted a tragic story.
Well, I will say that...
Sorry, we're almost out of time.
Yeah, the only thing I would say is, like, it was just, when you follow historical chronology and you stick to it, you're going to have a sad story. So why not blow it up and, like, think about things the way we all do as humans in, a much more circular pattern. So when you do that, we were able to bring in a more natural story.
Well, it was such an amazing documentary. I would love to have you back with Madonna Thunderhawk.
I'd love to have her have a chance to talk. We're about to go to a bunch of other things, but San Francisco American Indian Film Festival was, like, always a dream 10, 15 years ago. We would go and think, oh, maybe someday we'll finish a film.
Well, thank you so much. 20 years of hard work on this, Beth. Thank you so much for making this film. Beth Castle is co-director and producer of Warrior Women, a documentary about Madonna Thunderhawk, an amazing longtime activist and leader in the American Indian movement. We've also been joined today by Chrisanne Hessing. She directed the short film Turning Tables, which is about Josh DePerry, also known as Classic Roots. He performs powwow techno and incredible music. He's Ojibwe and Blackfoot. And Zoe Hopkins is a writer, Mohawk language teacher, and director of Kayak to Klemtu. And if you're in the Bay Area, I hope you can see all of these films. The American Indian Film Festival runs through November 11th at the Brava Theater in San Francisco. Thank you all so much.
Thank you.
Thank you
for having us.
Thank you so much for all your great work. Thank you for coming in today. And thank you, Zoe and Beth, for joining us on the phone. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.